Baby love, I think I've been a little too kind. Didn't notice you walking all over my peace of mind. And the shoes I gave you as a present. Putting someone first only works when you're in their top five. And by the way, I'm going out tonight.
What's up, Wisconsin? Welcome back, and welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 3 p.m., and that means it is time to talk money. I've got two great guests. We've got Scott Ellis, an actual millionaire, who is one of the founding members of the Patriotic Millionaires. He's gone to all of the fancy schools. Why tariffs are taxes on the middle class. And we've got, of course, an expert, Dr. Lindsay Owens. She is the executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative. She served as the senior economic policy advisor to one of my favorite senators, Elizabeth Warren. Welcome to you, Lindsay. Welcome to you, Scott. Thanks for making time this afternoon.
It's great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Let's just jump right in. The Trump campaign has tried to blame the Biden administration for the inflation that we've seen. We know that when Joe Biden took office in January of 2021, by June, inflation hit a peak of just a hair under 9%. We just got new inflation reports today. We've got annual inflation at the lowest level it's been since that time at under 2.5%, around 2.3%. So we've seen incredible improvements. But fundamentally, Lindsay, who is responsible for the inflation that we saw that started, at least Trump claims that it started during the Biden administration and that Joe Biden is to blame for the inflation problem?
Yeah, look, so we all just lived through a historic period of inflation. I mean, you know, it's been 40 years since we've seen inflation like that, and it obviously hurt, right? It was tough for many families to keep up with rising costs. And there were a number of reasons for it, right? And there were some, you know, sort of good reasons for it, right? There was, you know, folks had a little bit more money in their pocket at the beginning of the pandemic, thanks to pandemic stimulus. You know, we were dealing with supply chain shortages across the economy coming out of the pandemic. And these were both things that put pressure, upward pressure on prices. But there was another reason why inflation was so bad and so bad for so long. And that is a pretty straightforward one, which is companies not only passed along their rising costs during this period, but they went for more. They gilded the lily, and you know they gouged us. You know, you can call it profiteering, you can call it gouging, whatever you want. But the short version is they exacerbated this problem. They made it much worse than it needed to be, and they made it worse for longer than it needed to be. Luckily, we're really on the other end of this in terms of month over month inflation. But of course, just because inflation comes down doesn't mean prices do. So, you know, we're still dealing with prices, you know, in many cases, you know, 20% higher than they were at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah, it's absolutely stunning to me. We are at a time of unprecedented corporate profits. And much of it is related to this. I've heard people use the terms greedflation, shrinkflation, all these. What do all of what are they pointing to this idea that actually one of the main drivers of this extended inflationary period is basically corporate greed?
Yeah, I think there are a few different really strong data points we can look at when we're interested in understanding the role of corporate profiteering in driving inflation or greedflation, as some people call it. The first thing we can do is listen to companies and CEOs themselves. On earnings calls with investors throughout this period of high inflation, they've been pretty candid about their pricing strategies and what they've said over and over. And you know, this isn't one or two CEOs. This is across the board in the Fortune 500. What we've heard is that companies have passed along their rising costs and gone for more. They've said, look, inflation has been good for our business. We feel really confident in our ability to pass along our rising costs. Because we were able to do that, we decided to go a little further still. You know, our outlook is good. Margins are increasing. Net pricing is increasing. You know, we heard this over and over. So I think that's a pretty strong data point. I think we can, you know, we can believe what they say when they tell us that they're you know, that they're gouging us, when they tell us they're fleecing us, I think, it, you know, it's okay to just take them at their word. The second thing we can do is we can look at the data. And there are a couple of data points that I think are important here. The first is, you know, profit margins are at historic highs, right? Before the pandemic, profit margins were running at like 13%. You know, now we're at like 20%, right? Mm. And what that tells me, it's not just that profits are high, right? You sell more glasses of lemonade, you're going to bring in more profits. When your profit margins are up, it means that you're selling each glass of lemonade for more profit. So the cost of the paper cup went up, the cost of the sugar went up, the cost of the lemons went up. You covered all of that by passing that along to me, but then you also went further still, and that's how you drove up your margins. And so the fact that margins have really been at record highs during this period, I think, you know, does lend some strong evidence to this corporate profiteering argument. And then the final is we can look at a decompositional analysis of the components of price growth during this period and compare that to the components of price growth during previous periods. And what we find is that, you know, the share of price growth that you can attribute to labor costs is lower than what it typically is. The share of price growth that you can attribute to rising input costs is in many cases lower. But the share of rising prices that you can attribute to profits has gone up considerably and is well above historical norms. And, you know, depending on the period you look at, you know, it's between 30, 40, even 50%, again, depending on the period you look at in this post-pandemic period, of price growth is being driven by corporate profits.
Yeah, that's it. We've looked at this from a lot of angles on the show, Dr. Owens, and that piece, right, that the corporate profits aren't showing up the way that you would hope they might, either in additional capital investment, R&D, or in wages. It's just straight profits, and they're being sucked out of companies through a whole bunch of the things that we've discussed on the show, like Scott buybacks. Now, Scott, you have spent some time in corporate America. You did quite well, sir. Is there a chance that CEOs are just stuffing line in their pockets with all this increase in profit margins and the highest profit margins in modern history? Is that what's going on here?
Well, I guess I would say, of course, this is profit maximization. The one comment I would add is not to think about it as the CEO lining their pockets in terms of their salary and their wages, but in their ownership of the company. So it's really about the owners who are the ones that are getting really wealthy. And we need to make sure we remember that although, of course, it is very important and fantastic for individual employees to have ownership in the company, and they do, and I was very proud to have some ownership in Hewlett-Packard, but it was a very small amount compared to the huge amounts owned by a small number of owners who, in general, are very wealthy. And so when we think about who is it that benefits the most from things like this, it's the wealthy owners. When we think about profit equals revenue minus expenses. Profit is what the owners get. What's the biggest expense? Labor. And so the whole system is designed, and especially I think about capitalism and hypercapitalism, we're not just trying to make profit, we're trying to maximize profit. And one of the key things we do is we shift value to the owners and away from the workers. And I think that's a key part of what's happening here.
Yeah, an example of this in a recent piece written for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, our senator, Wisconsin Senator Tammy Baldwin, shared that a popular diaper manufacturer reported that it cost them $75 million less to make diapers after the pandemic, and yet they still raised their prices. A case study, an example of this very phenomena that you both are describing. Now, we've talked about the fact that Trump's tax cuts really kind of hypercharged this capitalism. I like the term hypercapitalism, Scott, and helped spur this corporate profiteering and really, again, hypercharge the inflation. Why is that so? Why did the tax cuts help turbocharge inflation? Why did they not help reduce inflation?
I mean, I would say just to, you know, to give you a one sentence answer, look, it's a lot more fun to fleece you if I get to keep more of the winnings, right?
Yes.
And I have to send less of the winnings off to the Treasury Department. So I think, you know, in general, you know, the incentives are towards bringing in more profit when the corporate tax rate is lower. And we obviously saw just a really enormous drop off in the corporate tax rate after the Trump tax cuts in 2017, taking us from 35% to 21%. Of course, that's assuming companies pay the full 21%, which many do not. But I think, it's absolutely the case that a higher corporate tax rate during this period could have functioned a little bit like a de facto excess profits tax, right? And helped us, pull back on some of the rent sinking and extraction that we saw during this period. But I did want to, I do think the diaper example is so good. And I think folks may not fully appreciate, the diaper example. It's worth just spending a little bit more time on. Initially in the pandemic, you may remember, timber prices were up, right? And wood pulp is the kind of big main ingredient that goes into a diaper, right? That's the absorbent paper that sucks up all the baby pee, right? Keeps the baby dry. When wood pulp prices were high, diaper companies were passing along their rising costs, right? But timber costs fell and wood pulp costs fell. And what Procter & Gamble and Kimberly-Clark, these are the two big diaper manufacturers, they basically have 80% of the market share. They really own all of the brands that you're familiar with, Luvs, Huggies, Pull-Ups, all of them. What they said on their earnings call is, look, I think, customers have gotten used to this higher price point. Even though we're getting a lot of, savings and wiggle room now with timber prices falling, we're just going to stick to these higher prices. We're not going to pass any of that savings back along. And as a result, we're going to be able to take in, considerably higher profits in the quarters to come. And that's basically what they told their shareholders. Meanwhile, for many families, diapers are a pretty big expense, a pretty big line item. It's not exactly something you can go without. I have a one-year-old. Yeah. I know this intimately.
They're a necessity. I'm going to have to hop in. That is Dr. Lindsay Owens. She is the executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative. We're talking about price gouging, basically, and corporate profits and greed. I'm joined also by patriotic millionaire Scott Ellis. The discussion continues after these brief messages. You're on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. Keep it locked. More coming up next. Half hour. They've got plenty in their brains. Both very, very smart folks talking money with me, Maggie, and all of you on today's installment of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. My guests are Dr. Lindsay Owens. She is the executive director of the Groundwork Collaborative. She was the senior economic policy advisor to Senator Warren. She's got a PhD from Stanford and a bachelor's degree from UPenn. And she's got a book coming out on exactly what we're talking about today. It's called Gouged, The End of a Fair Price in America. I'm also joined by Scott Ellis. He is a patriotic millionaire, one of the founding board members of the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute. He is formerly of McKinsey and Silicon Valley. Welcome back to you both. Scott, I want to toss it to you. I think you've got what is probably the most important question for Lindsay this afternoon.
Yeah, I would love to talk about what happens next. And so Vice President Harris has called for some new policies to reduce inflation and to prevent price gouging and address the things we're talking about. So I'd love to hear more about these proposals and what you think about them.
Yeah, so in Vice President Harris's first sort of campaign speech, laying out her economic policy a few weeks ago in North Carolina, she said she'd be laser focused on lowering costs for families, particularly the cost of the things that matter most. So a roof over your head and food on the table. And when she talked about bringing down the cost of housing, she laid out a number of policies, including building more units of housing to help provide more affordable housing. But she also talked about taking on rent setting software. And it was really interesting because just a few days after she gave that speech, the Department of Justice filed a price fixing case against a Texas-based software company, real estate data company called RealPage. And in that complaint, which I actually read through the full 100-page complaint, it's just really fascinating. What you find out is that RealPage has facilitated a vast conspiracy among corporate landlords in the multifamily rental space. And by their own admission, they think that their conspiracy has resulted in rent prices at between 3% and 7% above competitive levels. So it's had a real significant and sizable increase in the cost of housing for millions of families who live in units whose landlords use RealPage. And so one of the things that Harris said she was going to do is, really put a stop to that. She talked about a piece of legislation she would support to end that. But I think, frankly, her administration right this very minute, in bringing this suit against RealPage is already starting to take on the process of cracking down on some of the drivers, the profiteering drivers of prices for families. The other thing she talked about, and she got a lot of grief for this, but I think she was spot on this one as well, is she talked about the big grocers and the big food manufacturers who have been gouging consumers. And she said a couple of things. The first thing she said is she's going to make sure the grocery market is more competitive. And again, already her administration just this week we're hearing testimony in the case that the Federal Trade Commission brought blocking what would be the largest grocery merger in U.S. history between Kroger and Albertsons. And so, already that case is underway. One of the things we have learned in that case from sworn testimony from Kroger's CEO is that they were absolutely pricing above competitive levels. In fact, they said they were pricing the milk and eggs at levels well above what they needed to increase their costs. They talked about how retail inflation was higher than cost inflation. So the price you were paying at the store was even higher than the price you needed to pay based on the increase in those underlying costs. And so I think this is, again, a step in the right direction to prevent more consolidation in a market that will drive up prices for consumers. And she talked about passing some federal price gouging legislation. And this really got a lot of the kind of DC insider class and a little bit of a tizzy. But honestly, it's pretty vanilla in a lot of ways. Yes. I mean, nearly 40 states have price gouging laws on the books. This is a pretty straightforward body of law that says, look, when it comes to essentials, particularly things like food, water,
diapers.
Great. Another great example, baby formula. Look, even if you can charge it during a crisis because there's a shortage, doesn't mean you can't, right? Yeah. And in red states and blue states, this isn't Venezuela. This is Texas. This is Louisiana. This is Florida. This is Indiana. And states like this, they've said that companies can't exploit crises, whether it's a pandemic or a wildfire or a period of economic disruption like this period of high inflation. We're not going to let companies run up the score during a crisis. And I think she's exactly right to propose something like this at the federal level. It's really hard to play whack-a-mole with these, national and international companies state by state. A federal price gouging ban, I think, would be a really important tool to have on the books going forward to prevent some of the gouging that we saw in food and grocery during this period of high inflation over the last few years.
It was a complete no-brainer to me. We made war profiteering illegal, right, in the past. This is pandemic profiteering, right? It's out of control corporate greed. I also, as a legal scholar and an economist, was totally scared of when the grocery merger was announced. I thought, oh my gosh, we already have a grocery inflation problem. And I want to ask you really specifically about that, but very glad to see these additional enforcement actions. And certainly, again, as a lawyer that litigated in the securities space, it was always those gosh darn earnings calls where the corporate leaders would say exactly what they're doing, which is they come up with the fancy terms for them, right, Scott? Like retail inflation, It's price gouging. That's what that is. They just come up with a benign sounding name for it. We've got just a couple minutes left. Very briefly, Lindsay, prices have risen 19% in the last 3 years, though families are now paying 25% more for groceries. We see the same thing showing up in egg prices, which seems to be what everybody's talking about. Is it for these very reasons, both price fixing to an extent, increased consolidation, as well as price gouging?
Yeah. Just to your point on the euphemisms and earnings calls, my favorite is shrinkflation, which is basically charging you more for less. One is price pack architecture, right?
I love it. I'm writing it down. Price pack architecture.
Yeah. Very, very sophisticated sounding way of ripping you off. Look, I think in food and grocery, there are a number of things going on, including, as I mentioned before, real shortages, right? In food, we see shortages frequently. We see things like the bird flu, which caused shortages in eggs. We see wildfires, floods, famines, droughts, things like that affect food supply in very real ways. But what we also see is companies not just trying to get through those shortages and bring supply back online, but enjoying the fact that those shortages provide periods where you can hike prices and a little bit of cover for hiking prices. People understand that it's the bird flu. They know they're going to have to pay a little more. But what we've seen when we look at the history, the legal history, a price gouging case against Cal-Maine, one of the nation's largest egg producers, is that, Cal-Maine wasn't busting their butt to get egg supply back online and get prices down. They were fanning the flames of the shortage. They were exporting eggs to keep the domestic supply low, and they were calling the flock, which is just, it's outrageous insane to think about. So
hang on, Dr. Owens, would you guys mind spending a little bit more time with us? Because this is what people care about. It is the kitchen table of politics. We'll be back with more. I've got Dr. Owens and Scott Ellis of the Patriotic Millionaires. We're talking about price gouging, because that's what's going on, folks. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back in just a moment.
Lost by a whisker.
Next mistake, love's a game, wanna play. Let's not make another mistake, shall we? Maybe no more Donald Trump. I don't think that's such a great idea. My special guests for this edition of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money are explaining to us in part why that is the case, specifically as it relates to price gouging and inflation. My great guests this half hour, plus this little bonus segment, are Dr. Lindsay Owens. She holds a PhD from Stanford and her bachelor's is from UPenn. She was the senior economic policy advisor to Senator Elizabeth Warren. She's got a book coming out called Gouged, The End of a Fair Price in America. She is joined by patriotic millionaire Scott Ellis, a founding board member of the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute, a Harvard and Stanford graduate, formerly of McKinsey and Silicon Valley. Welcome back. Thank you for spending a bit of extra time with us. Lindsay, when we left you, you were describing especially the price gouging and, frankly, price manipulation. There's sort of two things going on there, especially as it related to egg production. You noted a particular egg manufacturer that price manipulated by artificially reducing supply, which if you've taken a single microeconomics class or even heard of it in the vernaculars, when supply goes down and demand is steady or rising, prices will go up, period, full stop. It is like the sun rising in the east and setting in the west. I call this price manipulation. They did it two ways, you noted, by culling the basically killing chickens so there are fewer eggs, and actually exporting eggs outside of the U.S. Am I getting this mostly right? And please feel free to elaborate a bit more if you wish, Dr. Owens.
Yeah, I think, you know, at a really high level, the way I like to think about this is, you know, you need means, motive, and opportunity to commit the perfect crime, right? I think the motive, we sort of all know the motive here. Like, folks are looking for profit. They're out to make a buck. But just because you want to make a profit doesn't mean, you know, doesn't mean you'll be able to make a big one. You also need means. And I think in many cases, what we see in our economy is that the means that these companies have and that they've amassed over time is market size and market dominance, and therefore pricing power. When you're not looking over your shoulder, worried about a competitor nipping at your heels, you have a lot more position to charge more and to charge prices above competitive levels. And so in the case of diapers, which we talked about, in the case of eggs, which we talked about, in a number of agricultural markets, whether it's sugar or beef or chicken or poultry, you know, there are a few big players who really lock up large portions of the market. And then the final piece is opportunity. And I think, you know, this period of high inflation gave companies a lot of cover to increase prices more than they really needed to because, hey, everyone was doing it. People were expecting it. They could blame it on, you know, the ship sitting outside the port of LA, they could blame it on the shipments not coming from China. There was a lot of cover. You know, in the food sector, there are a lot of other opportunities that provide that cover, whether it's bird flu, whether it's drought, whether it's another natural disaster. So, you know, I think when you see these three pieces come together, you often get this type of profiteering. And when I see profiteering, price fixing, price gouging, you know, I look at whether or not these three pieces are present. And the answer frequently is yes, right? And so to really unwind this, we have to do a few things, right? We have to shape the economy so that it is more competitive, right? Yes. So that there are more players who can price competitively, can come in and price at a lower level. We need, you know, rules of the road and enforcement against some of this activity, which is already illegal. Price fixing is already illegal. Price gouging is already illegal in certain situations in many states. You know, and we also need, I think, you know, as a society to decide what we're comfortable with. And I think, you know, most Americans have said they're not comfortable with companies running up the score during these crisis periods. And so we may need federal legislation and new laws on the books to curb this type of behavior. But, you know, the tax code plays a role too, right? We need a tax code that doesn't incentivize the kind of cotton candy economy, the extraction, the buybacks, and instead incentivizes the meat and potatoes, right? Yeah. The production, the building, making America competitive and resilient for decades and generations to come. And so there are a lot of things that we need to think about doing to build that economy. But I do think, you know, when companies have means, motive, and opportunity, we've seen over and over again that they've exploited it.
Yeah, we see it across so many sectors. I know you mentioned housing as well. That's one of the things that when I think of these sectors and the essential needs of a regular family in the United States, the way that housing prices have been driven up artificially is truly, truly scary. And the irony here to me, and Scott, I want to ask you a bit about your perspective, having worked in corporate America and as a patriotic millionaire. The irony to me is that you hear a lot of opposition to these very common sense policy proposals that Dr. Owens is describing from people who in other circumstances describe themselves as big time capitalists, right? Well, capitalism necessitates really good competition, low barriers to entry or lower, so that you don't have these means, motive, and opportunity to engage in the price manipulation and price gouging that Dr. Owens has described. I think it's real. There's a tension there. It just doesn't carry through. What's your perspective, having worked in corporate America and as a patriotic millionaire?
No, I agree completely. And I would say it's not new. If we go all the way back over 100 years to the Gilded Age and to the early days of big capitalism in America, how did people get incredibly wealthy? It was not by cultivating competition. It was by building monopolies. And they became so present that Theodore Roosevelt and the entire progressive movement had to bust up the trusts. So yes. I think sometimes we all believe in the fantasy of capitalism, which is perfect information for customers, perfect competition, the ability for customers to switch. And those are the things that we really want to cultivate in capitalism. And I talked a little before about capitalism versus hyper-capitalism. In capitalism, I go to the baker, and if the baker next door to that one has cheaper bread that's better, I'm going to go get that instead, because as a customer, I can choose. And that's what drives innovation. That's what drives lower prices. Big companies don't want that. They want to establish monopolies so you don't have a choice. They want to confuse you so you don't know you can get a better deal. And they want to lock you in so you can't switch. Because the thing that enables price gouging to work is if customers can't move, they can't switch. And so this goes all the way back to, in some ways, to the foundations of big capitalism in America. And I think we absolutely see it happening today. And I think this is the kind of thing that leads the patriotic millionaires to really talk about making sure we've got a fair tax system, right? It's rigged in the sense that wealthy people like myself are not paying enough in taxes. We should be paying more. We need a real living wage. And part of what we think about with that is both the wage, but also making sure we don't pass costs on to our working families, right? Who really are affected by the prices of gasoline and diapers and eggs, much more, frankly, than people who have millions of dollars. And we need to distribute the power. And a lot of that about, that's about enabling the true elements of capitalism and free markets to actually be in place. And I think that's a lot of what companies are trying to avoid, which is how they're price gouging and maximizing these profits.
And we haven't even gotten into the tech space. I mean, we know about the Google antitrust suit. I mean, it happens across sectors. Basically, anything that you're touching as a middle-class consumer, there is motive, means, and opportunities in a lot of these different industries. You mentioned the Gilded Age, Scott, and this is something that drives me absolutely bananas. We look at wealth inequality. We're at or surpassing the levels of wealth inequality our country saw back in the Gilded Age. It is no accident that the confluence of both monopoly or monopolistic power and a tax code that is rigged is creating this accelerated and acute wealth inequality. And we haven't even gotten to the tariff question yet. So I want to end here because it is the flavor du jour, the question of the day, if you will. I call tariffs sales taxes because that's how they show up and hit our pocketbook. There are additional input costs for producers in the United States or importers in the United States. And what are they going to do? They're not going to eat those costs, are they, Dr. Owens? They're simply going to pass those along to consumers. Is it fair to call tariffs an indirect sales tax?
Yeah, look, I think... you know, President Trump is proposing pretty widespread blanket tariffs that I do absolutely think will, you know, result in higher costs for many American families. But, you know, I do think tariffs can be a useful part of our toolkit when it comes to the economy. And I think the Biden administration has used them strategically to facilitate, you know, a green transition in this economy, to facilitate and encourage American manufacturing, to discourage dumping, by the Chinese when it comes to electric vehicles, things like that. And so, you know, definitely a good question for a longer conversation. But I think, you know, the strategic use of tariffs can make a lot of sense. And also, I think what President Trump is proposing is really, ill-advised and will absolutely lead to higher costs for many families.
Yeah, that's Dr. Lindsay Owens. She's got a PhD from Stanford and her bachelor's from UPenn. Of course, I would get a nuanced and detailed response to a question that is often oversimplified. I myself may be guilty of that at times. And so I thank you, Dr. Owens, for pointing out that when we look at economic policy and things like tariffs or any sort of trade protectionist policies, that there are gradations and nuances, and the sort of wholesale across the board tariffs that Donald Trump is proposing is frankly laughed at by any economist that is worth their salt. It's just not a tenable policy proposal. Scott, as we close out this segment here, sir, I want to think about and ask you both, I'll ask you to start, Scott, and we'll close with you, Dr. Owens. What should voters and people listening to this be asking candidates for office when we go into this fall election, when we're thinking about things like how price gouging, price manipulation, and monopolies show up and impact our families' pocketbooks?
Well, man, there's a first part, which is to think about the goal of these kinds of policies, right? Where we're talking about tariffs, pricing, who are we trying to help? And are we really seeking shared prosperity to benefit all of American households and families? Or are we really just trying to benefit the owners of these huge companies, many of whom are already very wealthy? So I think they should be thinking about that as the as a key driver and really focusing on how do we make sure that free markets work so that customers can have choice to drive innovation and better quality, but also to drive down prices, which is how capitalism is supposed to work in the first place.
Dr. Owens, we've got about a minute left.
Yeah, if I get two questions, here are the two I would ask. The first is, what are you doing to take on, one of the biggest problems in our economy and our democracy, which is that, companies and the extraordinarily wealthy have too much power in our economy and as a result, too much power in our democracy. And the second question I'd ask is, what are you doing to support the people who make the economy go, the workers whose labor powers our economy, the consumers whose spending powers our economy, the caregivers whose unpaid labor keeps our economy running? And so those would be my two questions.
Thank you both so very much. Thank you for sticking around for a little extra. This has been an extended version of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. My great guest this half hour with my indebted thanks, Dr. Lindsay Owens, Elizabeth Warren's former senior economic policy advisor. She's got a book coming out called Gouged, The End of a Fair Price in America. And now my frequent and recurring guest and co-host, Scott Ellis, a founding member of the Excessive Wealth Disorder Institute, worked at McKinsey and in Silicon Valley, and himself a patriotic millionaire. Thanks to you both on this critically important topic. I'll be back with more here on the Maggie Dawn Show in just a couple of minutes. We'll close out the afternoon of all of the great post-debate discussion. You can join us 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Your calls and texts and comments and questions are always welcome. Keep it locked, everybody. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Boys, only one love if it's torture. Don't say I didn't, warn ya. So it's gonna be forever, or it's gonna go down in flames. You can tell me when it's over, if the high was worth the pain. Got a long list of ex-lovers, they'll tell you I'm insane. You know I love the players, and you love the games. Keep me young and reckless, they'll take this way too far. It'll leave you breathless, away with a nasty scar. Got a long list of ex-lovers, they'll tell you I'm insane. But I've got a blank space, baby, and I'll write your name.
Wisconsin. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Thank you. I have been laughing my butt off from so many of the texts coming across the text stream. Thanks to Cam and Appleton, a whole bunch of you participating online. I appreciate it. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. It's been quite a ride these last couple of months in politics, and yesterday seemed to be quite the moment in politics. Again, I don't think a starker optical difference could be painted or depicted. We saw the former MAGA cult president appearing sweaty, disheveled. It was frankly Kamala Harris looking presidential and Donald Trump looking pathetic. I want to hear from you, your last thoughts, as we roll into the Dom Salvia Show, which is coming up next. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. These are some words I jotted down, Brian. Yeah, presidential versus pathetic, sane versus insane, a lying loser, right, versus someone that's trying to actually answer the questions asked of them.
Yeah, I kept thinking, what a loser. Yeah. What a loser.
It's really, really, I think, shocking. Let's take a little of the sound. I think Donald Trump may have indeed pounded the nail into his own coffin in some of the answers that he gave yesterday. He was asked clearly whether or not he would veto a national abortion ban. Brian, let's take a listen to that answer because, Brian is
just a moment. I have written these in such a way that I can't read them very quickly. This is not very awesome. And I'm answering a phone call at the same time. So
Brian does five things at once. We'll find the sound. I'm going to let Greg from Waukesha get a crack at it because he's been so very patient. Sorry, Greg, I didn't get to you while our guests were still here. Welcome to the Maggie Dawn Show. What was your comment or question this afternoon?
I was just going to say that my eyes are getting gouged out by these extreme prices. But no, seriously, no offense to me, who is, of course, a blind person. I'm sorry. But I'm paying $3,600 per month on a medication, and my pharmacy can't even get it anymore. So they're putting me on some sort of experimental. Basically, I've become a human guinea pig, and because the pharmacy won't cover it, Medicare won't cover it, these drug companies are out of control. Reference to last night, Donald Trump has a plan. He's the king of the cliffhanger, isn't he, Maggie? He does have a plan, though. You know, he's just got extremely smart people working, or whatever the crap he said last night, you know. But he has a plan, you know.
Yeah, I have a concept of a plan that I might tell you about that I've been working on for 9 years, but don't have any of the specifics yet. It was a bad, terrible, no good, failing, give that not passing grade. Absolutely not. Let's take a quick listen to the would you veto a national abortion ban non-answer gobbledygook from Donald Trump.
If Donald Trump were to be reelected, he will sign a national abortion ban. Understand, in his Project 2025, there would be a national abortion, a monitor that would be monitoring your pregnancies, your miscarriages. I think the American people believe that certain freedoms, in particular the freedom to make decisions about one's own body, should not be made by the government.
Thank you, Vice President Harris.
Well, there she goes again. It's a lie. I'm not signing a ban, and there's no reason to sign a ban because we've gotten what everybody wanted, Democrats, Republicans, and everybody else, and every legal scholar wanted it to be brought back into the states. And the states
not this legal scholar.
And it may take a little time, but for 52 years, this issue has torn our country apart, and they've wanted it back in the states. And I did something that nobody thought was possible. The states are now voting. What she says is an absolute lie. And as far as the abortion ban, no, I'm not in favor of abortion ban, but it doesn't matter because this issue has now been taken over by the states.
Would you veto a national abortion ban if it came
to
your
desk? Well, I won't have to because, again, two things. Number one, she said she'll go back to Congress. She'll never get the vote. It's impossible for her to get the vote, especially now with the 50-50, and essentially 50-50 in both Senate and the House. She's not going to get the vote. She can't get the vote. She won't even come close to it. So it's just talk. You know what it reminds me of? When they said they're going to get student loans terminated, and it ended up being a total catastrophe. The student loans, and then her, I think probably her boss, if you call him a boss, he spends all his time on the beach. But look.
It's hard to find a cut point.
No, it's impossible. He was then pressed. J.D. Vance has said that you would veto the national abortion ban. And he basically then says J.D. Vance doesn't know what he's talking about. I haven't talked to him about it, which begged this question for me. And then we're going to go to the phones and the text lines. You haven't talked to your vice presidential candidate about abortion? What have you guys been talking about as you go on TV show after TV show insulting women every day? You haven't checked in with JD? Maybe you should, you know, dial back the childless cat lady thing. Ridiculous. Unfit. Derek from Wausau, what did you think about last night?
Oh my God. Kamala cooked him. Mopped the floor with Donald Trump. It was fantastic.
Yeah, she was in rare and impressive form. No sharper contrast. I heard somebody say Donald Trump was sort of like Captain Queequeg with the frozen strawberries, which I thought was pretty funny. Thanks so much, Derek. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening. We're going to try to squeeze in a couple more. Don from Milwaukee, what'd you think about last night?
Well, I want to offer a quick comment, Maggie. You know, please. I was kind of on the fence a little bit, but after hearing last night's debate, my God, I do really believe, I'm not a doctor or nothing, but I believe there's something wrong with him mentally. He's not fit to be a president, that I'll tell you right now. He couldn't even remember that he said he lost the election by a whisker.
I know. Unbelievable. Keith from Middleton, I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to get to you, my friends. I will be back tomorrow. We'll probably talk some more debates since Brian pulled all sorts of cuts. Ugh. Congratulations, Kamala. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it's always better when we stand together. The Dom Salvia Show is up next.
I have concepts of a plan. I'm not president right now.
You talk about extreme.